Hello guys, welcome to AFD Tech Talk. We are a bunch of friends who meet to have conversations about tech and the world of innovation. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Please retweet, like, and share, and enjoy today's episode.
Hello everyone. It's been a while. We went on a brief hiatus following the concluding episode of season 2. But guess what? We are back once again, just as we said. We went, but we left you a little note that
I'll be back.
So welcome to the AFD Tech Talk podcast. And today, I am your host, Salom Donyo. And we are starting this episode on a very bright note. We are going to paint a little bit of a picture over here, literally, because I have two very special guests to me who are going to help me in this regard. They're going to have a little talk about the tools of their trade. Simply put, this episode is going to be about photography. So today in the house, I have with me Gog. Did I get the name right?
Yeah.
Do you know whenever I hear Gog, my mind just goes to the Battle of Armageddon in the Bible, Revelation, where...
Oh, right.
Gog and Magog. It says the God Gog and Magog gathered up the armies.
There's that
to
one too.
there's
that one too.
Okay, cool. And then you are Enam. Adam.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm pleased to have you guys today on this episode, and thank you very much for making the time. Let's just go straight down into business. She make my heart beat say like say boom boom. Next time you're in Ghana, take you to bloom bloom. When we done, we go home and boom boom. Hop on the wagon, baby say vroom vroom. Say cheese, take a picture. Shaka pose, make a seat, take a picture. This is our very first time talking about anything related to photography, even though we should have probably touched on something like this quite a while ago, since photography has basically become a part of our daily lives. I can't imagine that a regular human nowadays goes a day or two without taking a picture, either of himself or something around him or her. So let's just go through a brief history. Let's just skim through a brief history of photography. So it all started, I think, what we call photography, or what can be termed photography, could be dating back to the 5th century. It became more of a thing after the camera obscura was invented in the 11th century by the Iraqis. And this was in use for a while. It couldn't really take pictures, but what it actually did was just to project an inverted image of something into a tent, into a dark lit tent. And this was what passed off as a camera for a very long time, and until it became small and portable in the 17th century. Now, this is what happened in the afterwards. A man called Joseph Niepce, who was a Frenchman, he used the camera obscura to expose the pewter plate coated with bitumen. And with that, we were able to have the first ever example of an image which could be temporarily embossed on a plate. So Joseph Niepce was the first person to come up with this innovation, and he collaborated with another Frenchman called Louis Daguerre. And Louis Daguerre, I don't know, is the name right?
Yeah, that's the right name.
Yeah, Louis Daguerre is the idea they brought together was to have a copper plate which was coated with silver, and they exposed it with iodine vapor and sunlight. And to create the image, the daguerreotype, that was a name given to their creation, sort of had to be exposed to light for like 15 minutes. And this was quite popular until the 1850s, where the emulsion plates came to replace this. And quite after that, Richard Maddox came up with an improvement where he used dry gelatin plates, and these could be stored and allowed for decreased shutter times. George Eastman decided to start a company called Kodak, and he developed a new type of film in the 1880s. So his innovation was to have a camera which held rollable film inside and did not need constant changing. This was really affordable, and for the first time ever, photography was not relegated to a sport of the rich and the powerful, but became accessible to everyday people like you and I sitting here and listening in. So by the 1940s, different types of film had been developed, but the most popular one was the 35mm film, which was introduced by Henri Cartier-Bresson, and he used it to photograph World War II soldiers. So prior to that, photography was more of like a staged act, because you'd have to be a photographer and then to get a portrait of yourself, and it was staged and all that. But Henri Cartier used this in a way such as his idea was to just take pictures of everyday life as it happened, and these were like World War II soldiers, and this brought the reality of the war to people, because photography was no longer a staged thing, and this birthed what we've come to know as photojournalism. And I think in that era, the most prominent or the most famous picture we could talk about was Joel Rosenthal's Raising the Flag on Iwo Jima, which celebrated the American victory in World War II in Iwo Jima. Polaroid invented instant film afterwards in the 1960s, and their cameras became a hit, especially the Model 95. But they stopped and buried their secrets with them. And as at now, it's a bit difficult to replicate that process. A lot of groups have tried, but they've not exactly gotten it quite the way Polaroid was, because they had a secret formula which they decided not to share with the world, just like Mr. Krabs. That was the Krabby Patties. And Asahi, Nikon introduced SLR cameras, and then smart cameras came up in the 80s. In 1991, Kodak introduced the digital camera. They introduced a camera which could store media electronically. So single lens reflex cameras became digitally available. I've been talking for quite a lot now. I don't know, before we go ahead, does any of you have anything, something I must have missed in here, any contribution, personal observation, which you want to chip in?
Nah, you've pretty much summed it up.
Pretty much summed it up. Same with you, Enam.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll start with you, Enam. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, the tools of your trade?
Okay, so my name is Enam, and my company name is The Grey Shutter. So that's the name I generally go by.
Okay, yeah, I've seen that. Well.
So yeah, you've probably seen it around, maybe on social media somewhere. Yeah. So I got into photography in 2011. So essentially, I was a hobbyist before then, but I actually started doing it professionally in 2011. Okay. Until now, and yeah, shoot mainly weddings and events, do corporate work as well, and that's practically tools of my trade. I'm a Canon guy. I started learning with Canons. I started learning from my boss with Canons. So I'm used to Canons, and that's what I use now.
That's what you use now.
Yes.
I have a little tie-in question to that, but I think I'd like to hear from Gog on what he has to say about that, and then we'll come back to this.
Okay. So my name is actually Lawrence. Lawrence Kaku.
So you're not related to any mythical deity or entity?
No, at all. My name is Lawrence. Gog happens to be the name I took for photography. Yes.
Is there any backstory to that, or it's just random?
Yeah, it's a bit of both.
It's a bit of both.
Yes, because it was random meeting it, but then the backstory I could relate to, that's why. So it's actually tied with astrology. And funny enough, I'm not very, very, how do I even put it? I don't really relate to that side of things or spirituality. But then when I came across, I'm like, yeah, this makes sense. Partly because I was looking for a very different name. Around that, what I was surrounded by was using your name for your brand. So like, I couldn't think of Lawrence Photography. So yeah, I happened to come across that, and then it has to do with being ambitious and creative. So I decided to just take it on. I mean, I relate to that. Yeah. So I started my journey, or I got exposed to photography in 2013, my first year in design school in tech. So that was introduction class to photography, where all the history that you just mentioned was poured into our heads for academic purposes.
Okay, so you're not a hobbyist.
I think it was in there. So I was using the camera for just assignments. Yeah, and I got interested, and I decided, okay, well, let's see how this goes. Yeah, so professionally since 2017, 2018, yeah, that's when I decided, okay, let me just go full time with this. So between then and between 2013 and 2017, 18, you can say hobbyist or educationalist, if that's a thing. Just to do assignments.
Professional.
Just to do assignments and hang around with other photographers, and just that's it. No giddy giddy giddy. Nah.
So you adopted it, but in the end, it's adopted you now.
I guess, yes, exactly.
Yeah, so the tools of your trade.
I'm a Canon shooter as well.
Oh man.
But I started with Nikon.
I started with Nikon.
Which is what was available, but then I met Canon, and then I've never looked back.
Yeah. What prompted that transition? Why did you defect?
Well, again, most of the people around me were Canon shooters, and around the time I didn't really have a camera, so if I need to borrow someone's camera, it was Canon that was available. Okay. So then I had to, and it's actually easier to use than a Nikon. Yes.
True.
So I just realized that this is it, you know. And then also too, their gears are less expensive than Nikon. Yes, Nikon is very expensive.
Aside Canon and Nikon, have you shot with any other brands?
Not professionally.
Not professionally.
I've experimented with Sony, Panasonic. Yes, but then not for commercial work. You know, I can't afford to be on set and be figuring out where the settings are.
What about Enam? Have you experimented?
So, like he just said, I've also experimented with another brand, which is actually a Pentax. A medium format camera. Yeah. Yes. So I've tried that, but also not professionally. Yeah.
It's risky business.
It is. But funny enough, I've actually taken recently, I did the shoots, like a corporate shoot, but I just took it along and then tried it out after I got my, like, I secured my shots, like the main shots for the company. So, and it was nice. It was a nice different experience.
It's a nice different experience, yeah. But it's not something you're going to commit.
Honestly, for medium format cameras, they are better used in a studio or in a studio setup.
A very controlled setting
when you don't move around too much and stuff like that. So I honestly don't think, that's not me in general, because I like shooting events. So I don't think I'm going to dive into that anytime soon.
Okay. Cook, are you also into events or studio photography?
A mix of both, actually. A good balance, actually. Yes. So if, like he's saying, I do fancy medium format cameras, like the Hasselblad. Yeah, but if I should have that, it's not leaving the studio, because it cannot shoot an event.
It
cannot shoot an event.
Okay.
I mean, unless you want to end up in jail, because you miss all the moments.
You miss all the moments. Whoa.
Yeah.
All right. So with the next session, which photographers would you say inspire you or have inspired you? I think you both mentioned that you got into photography as a result of it being a hobby or for academic purposes, but I didn't hear anything of, I saw pictures from so and so, and I'm like, you fell in love with their art and it grown you. So I want to know if there's anything of that sort going on with you guys.
Well, in the beginning, no, because for me it was just strict on how to use it for your assignments. Mm-hmm. And one would say you could have had other people do your assignments for you, which was a thing. Like, I can't use the camera, you have the camera, Charlie, take the picture for me, let me go and present. But then I think for me, I am a very curious person. So when it comes to certain opportunities. I don't really look to monetize it in the long term. I just want to know that I can do it and I can leave it as I can do it and that's it. So in the beginning, it was just, I can do it, I can take this picture. If I do get a good grade, I'm proud that I took it myself, and then that's it. But then when it became a professional thing, then the inspiration started. Then you start to look out for whose work actually makes a difference or speaks to you as a creative as well. So
yeah, I'm guessing you're going to answer that yet.
Yes. So, but then it's also a journey because you get to one point and then you are, I wouldn't say uninspired, but then you find a different inspiration. So there are a number of photographers locally, internationally, and also because I shoot across a number of genres, I have quite a wide range of inspirations. I have Carl Taylor. I look up to his work a lot. He's more of an advertising and commercial photographer. There's Susan Stripling. She does weddings. There's Jerry Jonas. He also does weddings. There's Emmanuel Eleke. He's Nigerian. He's also more commercial and a bit of weddings. There's locally, these people are more of my friends, actually. There's Focus and Blair. There's Jima. There's Click. There's Steve Morris. There's Franklin Jan. There's I've forgotten this guy's name. He's not really out on socials and that
stuff, but he's someone you also look up to.
Exactly. And during the course of the conversation, if I remember his name, I'll mention it.
Okay. And
yes, I've remembered. Sorry. Roger Yeboah. Yes.
Roger Yeboah.
Yes. Also good for
And are there any names in common with what Goog like put out right now?
So I think to be honest, yeah, like we have like a wide range of people, and like he said, there are so many people who you end up looking up to because you shoot across different genres.
Yeah,
and I don't really have too many that come to mind. I just know that this is their work and I like it.
Okay,
but starting out, because I started out understudying my boss, who was a wedding photographer, one major person we both liked and aspired to be was Tunji Sarumi. I don't know if you guys have heard about him before. He's a Nigerian photographer, but he's based in the States, and he does like really lovely weddings. So he was like my main inspiration for, he still is actually, but I'd say most of my work is inspired by him. That's one name I can put out there. And another name, I'm also something that most people don't know, but I really love cars as well. So I've started branching out into automotive photography.
Okay.
So there's a guy in the States also called Pepe Yandel, who I really like. He's on Instagram. He does really amazing work with cars, Photoshop and that kind of thing. Like he's really, really good. So that's like another main inspiration for me, especially now that I'm veering a bit more towards automotive photography.
Yes. You drew my attention to a minor detail I skipped when I was asking about the tools of your trade. So I was also expecting you guys to touch on a bit of the software side, because you obviously don't shoot and send the pictures.
So I use three softwares, not for every single picture, but these are the ones you find on my laptop. I use Adobe's Lightroom, Photoshop, and Capture One's software as well. These three. So mostly I use Lightroom for events, weddings, Photoshop for skin work or editing and stuff, and then Capture One I use for products or fashion or advertising work.
These are all subscriptions you've, because I know Adobe runs a subscription model with their software.
No, I don't have subscriptions.
So basically it's the same thing
with me.
Three lineup. So Photoshop, Lightroom, and Capture One.
And Capture One. All right. So moving on. Gog, you told me most of the photographers you looked up to were your friends, especially here in Ghana. How would you describe the photography scene here in Ghana? Is it lucrative? How lucrative is it? Like,
well, like any other business.
Let me throw in another word: competitive.
Competitive in terms of
competitive in terms of, you mentioned that, both you and Anna mentioned that you see a lot of friends work and then you are like, you're inspired, you are that. Do you feel challenged?
Okay. So in terms of that, okay. So do I should address the financial part first.
Right? Any how you want it, any okay. order.
So like any other business, it's as lucrative as you can make it. That's how I put it. Because you find someone who can earn a lot with the same set of skills and business modules and someone who is struggling, right? So just like you can have Messi being highly paid and someone struggling to make £100,000 a week. Yeah.
In the same club.
In the same club, you understand. So it can be lucrative. But I don't know what measure you are judging by. Maybe $1 million a year or that I cannot tell. Yes, but okay. It is lucrative, especially in this economy of ours. When you contrast it with the usual system of working, I'll say it has an upper hand. In that regard, it has an upper hand. For competitiveness, it's also there. You find, let's say, every weekend there's a wedding. So every weekend you are looking to see a new set of inspiring images, which is usually the case. Every weekend this photographer is releasing set of fantastic images from their wedding. And then the next weekend you're like, all right, let's see. And then the next weekend it's like more fire and all that. You get it. Yeah. So it's inspiring, actually. It is inspiring. And I think collectively it makes the industry more prestigious when you contrast it with other countries or other continents. Yes. I think that is there.
Okay. And I'm now come to you, right?
So I mean, to be honest, so far, it's like Gog and I are just like a mirror reflection of each other, because in terms of ideas, opinions and things, it's practically the same thing. And in terms of finances, what I would say is the industry is very saturated now. It wasn't,
yes.
If I'm comparing, because I started out in 2011, if I'm comparing then, like what the scene was like then and now, back then it was only a handful of photographers like who were doing
that
really
is even
good
what
work.
I actually look out for when I talk about competitiveness. You are on to the saturation aspect of the entire thing. Like there's a lot of people who are into it now. You can I didn't interrupt you, I just
no problem.
Yeah.
So there's like I was saying, back in the day there were only a handful of like really good photographers who were working almost every other weekend. But now there are like so many. If you compare, there are so many people in the system now.
Yeah, and not to cut you short, it's an open market too. You don't need a degree, you don't need anything.
Yes.
So
yes.
All you just need is a label and a camera. Exactly. And proof of work, that's all.
All you need is a camera and a dream.
All right. And that's, I mean, obviously,
I know what my next business venture is going to be.
You might be just maybe a year or two late, because, I mean, things are crazy now. Like, almost everyone is doing it, and at the end of the day it gets more complicated than that. Obviously it's good to have like a dream and to have equipment to start with, but business is different. Like
absolutely
the hobbies transitioning from a hobbyist into a businessman or doing that as it's like really hard.
It's like really
and,
hard.
And that's
I have a little question just tied into what you're saying right now.
So that's honestly, like if I look back, that's like the main thing I can say has changed in the photography scene in Ghana. It's really much more competitive now because there are so many people in the game now. Prices have gone down. So unless you have like a set of clients who are used to the quality of your work and the value they place on your work, so it means they can pay consistently what you charge even though your prices go up. It's going to be a bit of a struggle for people in general. And it is, I mean, as you can see, Corona 2 happened and business
events,
went down.
Yeah,
there were literally
were
no
not
events
really
throughout the year and that kind
really
of thing.
Taking place.
So, yeah.
I'm a bit curious as to how you guys pulled through, especially with the whole Corona happening. But here's my next question.
Yeah.
You mentioned to me that I have a camera, a dream, and proof of work. How much would it cost me to start out? The bare minimum that I can slap that title of photographer on myself. Consider that we are in Ghana.
Yes. Considering you're in Ghana, I don't know how you can place monetary value on time, but that's the most expensive part of it, time. Because you need time to make mistakes. You need time to create your proof of work. You need time to gain the experience, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so then after that, you have your camera, you have your, also, it will also depend on what genre of photography you want to do.
Okay, let's start with the most...
let's say portraits.
Portraits, yes. But I want to go into, this is an entrepreneurial question. I want to, because photography, and basically you guys took it up as a startup, and then you've been able to develop it into what it is now. So, yes.
Okay, so let's say portraits, startup, solo. You're looking at a camera, you're looking at some lights, let's say flash at least.
Yeah,
some box, bare minimum, some box, some reflector, maybe a backdrop or not, natural light, who knows. I'll say 10,000 CDs.
Ooh.
Yeah. Right about, because you're looking at a camera, let's say, even if you want to start with a full a crop frame.
Crop sensor.
Crop frame right now is like around 3K, a good one. Let's say you have a good one, 3K with 50mm basic. Yeah, so 3K to 4K. You buy flash, reflector. Well, okay, yeah, but 10K should be the roof. You can spend under. Yeah, you can spend under.
I'm a bit intimidated at this point. You guys are crushing my...
No, but that's if you are going... That's if you are going on a one-time buy.
Yeah. Yes,
but if you want to spread it across a period, you can start with 5K and then as you go, you are buying.
You buy this and buy that and buy that.
Yeah.
You agree with what...
And that's the thing about photography, because if you want to buy all your stuff at once with one check, you probably pass out. But if you look back over a period, you're like, this is your net worth in terms of gear, you'd be like, wow. Yeah. So it's like that. It's like that.
All right. So anytime I Google photography, I run into two terms which always leave me a little bit confused. The first one is an SLR or a single lens reflex. And then the second term I normally run into is the mirrorless camera. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who is faced with this confusion. Can you guys just clear this? And probably one of you can explain what...
I'll leave that to your number.
You can explain. Why run away?
When it comes to the technical side, I'm not like this.
Well, to make it as less technical as possible. So, the camera being the device, right? One, the mirrorless is more of an it's electronic, right?
Okay.
And it's as close as you seeing with a human eye.
Okay.
In terms of what you are seeing is what you are getting, right?
Okay.
So it's, let's say, a replica of your eye. So okay, whatever you are seeing in real time is what you are seeing on the camera.
On the camera.
Yes. But with the SLR, what you're seeing in real time is not what you're seeing in the camera. So you'd have to actually make sure what you're seeing and what the camera is recording are the same, right? So they all have viewfinders. Let me break it down.
That's a bit confusing.
Yeah, let me break it down.
You know, there's an internet term called what you see is what you get. If what I'm seeing is not what I'm getting, how do I make sure what I see is what
exactly
I'm going to get?
So that's what I'm breaking down to you. So let's say you have an SLR camera, right?
Yes.
It's made up of a mirror. Like the Obscura or the history of the cameras you give.
Yes.
Where everything is inverted. So that's how the actual SLR camera works, right? So it's a mirror that is going to invert whatever it's recording onto the screen.
Okay.
Right? So if you are looking at a scene where, let's say, there's just a tree in the middle of nowhere, on the mirror, it's going to be inverted.
Okay.
Upside down, yes. And then it converts it back onto another mirror for you to see at the back of the camera as what you're seeing.
All right.
You understand? So that's what the mirror is there for. So once that mirror is broken, that's it. The camera is dead.
The camera is dead.
Yes. So that's what has been fixed in the mirrorless. That's why it's called mirrorless.
A mirrorless camera.
Okay. You understand? So no mirror. So what it's seeing as it is, there's no need for invention or transmission or turning upside, nothing. As it is, it's, you get.
Does that present an advantage over the SLR or the DSLR as?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, because they all have viewfinders. Right, you are looking through the camera. The viewfinder is the small part you have to look through to see what the camera is seeing. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, on the SLR, what you're seeing in the viewfinder is not what the camera is seeing, like I'm saying. It has to invert and process everything before you see it. But on the mirrorless, as you're looking through the viewfinder, you are seeing exactly what it is. So let's say you are in a scenario where you're shooting an event or you're shooting anything, bright sun outside. You have to work on your camera settings to get the right exposure and all that, right?
Okay.
So on an SLR, if you're looking through the viewfinder, it will look normal, like daylight. But if you press the shutter, your settings may be off and you probably shoot a way overexposed picture or a blur picture, right? Okay. But with the mirrorless, once you're looking through the viewfinder, it's telling you, okay, this is dark or this is bright, just by looking through the viewfinder before you even take the shots. You understand? So that's the advantage of the mirrorless. So with the mirrorless, you look through, you can see, oh, it's dark. Then you start to adjust your settings. But with the SLR, you would have to look through, take a test shot, and decide, okay, now it's too dark. Or with experience, you can guess your settings.
My challenge here is, mm-hmm. I know that as a photographer, as you're doing this, you also have to consider the composition of the subject.
Yes.
That you are taking. So isn't it a little bit too much work having to figure out this while also dividing another part of your brain to handle the composition of the subject you're shooting?
Yep. That's the nature of the job.
It's quite complicated.
It is very complicated. It's a lot of maths and a lot of science.
I know, right? So aside having a camera, a dream, and people are like, I need to be smart.
Yeah. You have to think.
And one, just to add to what Gok said, another major benefit of a mirrorless over a DSLR is the size.
Yes.
Mirrorless cameras don't have to have the mirror contraption in front of the sensor. So essentially, most mirrorless cameras are practically like half or even less than half the size of an equivalent DSLR. So that's like one major thing. So most now the sales of mirrorless cameras over the world have skyrocketed because people are much more okay with the compactness and the general like small nature of it. And that also gives you added advantage of giving you professional looking images.
Powerful, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Okay.
That's another thing.
All right. So far we've had a very interesting cruise dissecting photography from the ground up to where Gok and Enam have sort of exposed me to their views on various questions which I've had on my mind. But unfortunately, we would have to take a little break here with this episode. But no, we are not done. No. Don't get the wrong idea. We're not done. We are going to have a continuation of this conversation next week. So thank you guys for just listening with us. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to us, share with your friends, and look for us on social media, and let's continue this conversation. All right. Have a great day, guys. Bye.